Welcome to the Mr. Vincent Podcast, episode 125. I'm your host, Emmanuel Vincent. Kind of sad now that the NBA is over until the fall. Definitely one of the worst times. No, actually the worst time in sports. This down season, no NBA, no NFL. So it's the worst. But it gives you plenty of time to do other things as well. Try some new things out, go places, stay out, link up with your friends. So, this episode, I just discussed, recap these NBA finals that ended last night with the Denver Nuggets prevailing in five and winning their first championship in franchise history. That game was one of the ugliest games I've seen in a finals game ever. Funny thing though, I feel like that game gave me the feel of a game seven, kind of reminiscent of game seven between the Celtics and Lakers in 2010. Just a rugged game where a rugged low scoring game where both teams have went the distance and they're exhausted running on E essentially. And they're just trying to battle it out and see who can prevail. And that's what it felt like, but it was only five games. Could be the altitude as a series just shift from Miami to Denver for game five. That certainly could have been a factor, but it was just weird. And then obviously some terrible officiating. A lot of physicality was allowed. I thought they were a little overboard with letting them play. And then obviously there was that terrible call on Aaron Gordon with Jimmy Butler, took a three, fading away in the corner, kicked out his leg. They reviewed it for several minutes, and I'm thinking to myself, hey, that's got to be overturned. Oh, no. The call stands, and foul on Aaron Gordon. I'm like, what? That was bizarre in itself. But hey, again, the series is over now. Denver is champion. So, again, I just touched on that, touched on this incredible run by the Denver Nuggets and Nikola Jokic. Where do I think he stacks up against some of the all-time greats at the position? And also, I did touch on the Miami Heat, who played exceptionally well this postseason. Not necessarily so much these finals, but touched on them and Jimmy Buckets and what they should do in the offseason. Because this wasn't enough yet again. Their second finals in the parents of the last 4 years. So they come up short yet again. So something needs to be done in order for them to realistically have a chance at winning if they were to get back to the same situation. So I touch on that on this part. And then also I do touch on Shannon Sharp is gone from Undisputed. Today was his last day, so I did talk about that. The situation with him and Skip and what they're able to do over the past several years and where potentially he might end up after his departure from FS1. So overall, pretty good pod, and we can get into it right now. So I decided to talk about the NBA Finals a day after Denver's victory. So I just want to see what everybody's talking about in the media as opposed to doing a live reaction video. But I want to start by congratulating the Denver Nuggets on winning their first NBA championship in franchise history. It was long overdue. The fans waited and they got to able to celebrate with their team. It was good that they won it on their court. Because it just hit different as opposed to them winning on the road, being it's their first title. So the fans were able to soak it in with the organization and taking that memory. Nikola Jokic is great. He continued to be great. One of the best postseason runs in NBA history. He was the first player ever to lead an entire playoffs in total points, rebounds and assists ever. That is amazing. I'm thinking to myself, LeBron never did that before. I don't know. It kind of seems like something LeBron would do, but then again, I mean, rebounding would be tough for him to lead for an entire playoffs, even though he is, I mean, he's got a great rebounder for his position, but he's not like he's like a big who's playing down low, like Joker is. So that's probably why he's never like led the an entire playoffs in on all those total categories. But Joker did. He just like rewrote the history books on this run. Him and Jamal Murray, right? Amazing. Jamal Murray, salute to him. I know it was tough for him not being available for his team the last two postseasons after suffering the ACL tear. But he stayed committed, believed in himself, worked hard to get back to the spot he was. Because the last time we saw him in the playoffs was when they lost to the Lakers in the conference finals in the bubble. And 2 years later, he's an NBA champion. And so, salute to the guy. Denver is really set up to. I don't want to like dynasty. I've heard that all day. I don't know. They're just set up for success for the next several years. I'll say that. You got arguably the best player in the NBA currently, in Nikola Jokic, who is young. I believe he's like 28. You got Jamal Murray locked up. You got Michael Porter Jr. locked up. Aaron Gordon's still young. The only player that's 30 years old in their rotation was KCP, and he's locked up. Now, they probably are most likely going to lose Bruce Brown, who played his ass off in these finals and played his ass off to a bigger bag, as he has a player option this year, and he'd be a fool not to use that player option to survey the league to see what teams need. And I think the teams are gonna throw the bag at him. So take it. He already got a championship. But if you want him to come back to Denver for some reason, he can do that as well. So essentially, their core is locked up for the next several seasons. Now, is it gonna? It probably will be hard for them to keep that core, considering the new CBA. I don't know the whole all the details behind the new CBA, but I know that it's gonna be hard essentially to keep more than two max players on salary, rather on payroll. And they currently have three. Michael Porter Jr. is a max player. Aaron Gordon is close to a max, but not a max. So they probably will have a hard time, keeping this team together. We'll keep in the max players, but as long as you got Nikola Jokic, I think they're going to be in good hands, because his game, it's kind of contagious, and I feel like a lot of players who are, mid-level or that minimum would love a chance to, potentially compete for a championship, especially if they haven't gotten one. And who wouldn't be the beneficiary of playing with Nikola Jokic? He's the ultimate team player. He doesn't put himself before the team. He puts the team before him. He has a high IQ. He's gonna get you involved. You cut to the basket, he will find you. And when you touch the basketball, as a basketball player, you feel more engaged, you feel more involved. It's going to lift your spirits up on the basketball court, and you're going to be more enthused and more energetic. And I think that goes a long way. People don't talk about that enough. And it's good to see the Denver Nuggets do it, win this championship the way that they did, in terms of roster construction, building through the draft. They did draft Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter. They were all their draft selections. Now, of course, they did trade for Aaron Gordon, and acquired like the KCP and Bruce Brown. But their cornerstone players are homebred, so that's always a plus. They didn't move on from their coach Mike Malone. He's been there for eight seasons now, which is kind of oh, no, it definitely is rare. In today's NBA, you see coaches getting fired left and right. Coaches with championship pedigree that have won championships. We just seen that recently this past this offseason with the likes of Mike Budenholzer and Nick Nurse, who have been relieved of their duties. Stanton is so quick to bail on their on their coaches, because I mean it's a lot easier to when well when things go wrong, it's a lot easier to move on from a coach as opposed to a player. So I think that's what happens, but it's good to see that Denver has elected not to go that route and stuck with Mike Malone, who's shown himself to be a good coach. And then, and this team just believes in him. They play hard for him. He's definitely he's hitting all the right buttons, and they are just excelling right now. So I think that this team is set up in is set up to go a long way. But back to Nikola Jokic, as I mentioned, an historic run. I think that he is. I've seen a lot of people trying to rank him. What does he rank all time on the all-time list, on the top center list? I personally don't like necessarily ranking players until their career is all said and done, or they're on the verge of completing their career. Because just like damn, there's so much basketball to go. But I would say what I will say is what I said before on this pod. In my mind, there I've always had this in my mind for the longest. I think that there are the top five centers of all time that I don't think that will ever be moved out of position on the all-time ranking list for centers. In no order, you got Kareem, Wilt, Shaq, Russell, Hakeem. That is that who I think are the top five best centers of all time. Now, I do think that when Nikola Jokic's career is all said and done, I have to expand that list to top six. I don't think that these top six centers will ever be surpassed. That's how much I think of Nikola Jokic and what he's done so far in his career. Two-time league MVP, damn near easily probably could have won a third one. NBA champion, NBA Finals MVP, putting up these ridiculous video game stats, breaking le records left and right. Anytime you break a record that Wilt Chamberlain hold, you have to be acknowledged for that. And he is just amazing. He's fun to watch. I know a lot of people probably they at least the casual fan. Probably just doesn't appreciate his game because there's no flair, no athleticism, there's no charismatic rather impression that he makes. He's just a guy who just looks to be out of shape, but really is in shape. Who's just waddles down the court, kind of awkward the way he shoots. But the guy is just a brilliant mind. Just a joy to watch, and I just can't wait to see what's in store for the rest of his career. It's funny because you've seen all these people throughout this whole season kind of knock him or knock him and the Denver Nuggets because they just didn't watch them play. But if you watch basketball, you would realize that this is not out of the norm. This is what he does. Relatively consistently, not necessarily. I'm talking about the numbers. I'm not talking about the numbers, the stats that he puts up per se, but instead the impact that he has on the game, the joy that he brings to his teammates, the way that he leads by example. That is what Nikola Jokic does. That is what he did all year. That's what he did in the postseason, and that's what he did in the NBA Finals. And then it's a shame to see, a lot of people try to try to knock him while the MVP race was going on, and seeing the likes of Kendrick Perkins, bringing up, bringing the race element, the racial element into it as well, and then bringing it up the fact that he's a stat pattern because he's noticed that his shots were decreasing, but his assists were increasing, which is just I don't agree with that notion at all. So a lot of people just took it for granted, don't really appreciate him, but now everybody's singing it. A lot of people are singing a different tune. For the most part, everybody is. It's really funny just watching going on that Twitter page, Freezing Cold Takes. Oh my God, no, they're exposing a lot of people's takes. Thank God I haven't made that yet. But at the same time, I'm really not anybody right now. I have no notoriety. If I ever do, I probably might make that page one day too, right? But it's just funny seeing everybody. Everybody's old takes exposed, and I see a lot of people were exposing Nick Wright for his takes over the last several years. Well, the last 2 3 years in particular, of Nikola Jokic essentially calling, I believe, I want to say, the worst MVP in the last 50 years, basically. Just kind of downplaying Nikola Jokic, and then now he's just singing a different tune, saying, "Yeah, I wanted to see it first, but I just had to see it," which I think is a little nonsense too, and I think that he just doesn't really like didn't really appreciate Nikola Jokic's game to a certain extent. That's what I personally believe, but that's for another day. Yeah, but it's just funny seeing all these old takes exposed, and all these people who were saying that who favored the Suns to beat them in this conference semis and favored the Lakers to beat them in the Western Conference Finals. And then now they're just being exposed. And some people are saying, I believe I saw Chris Mannix saying that he doesn't think that Nikola Jokic's run has been this particular playoff run isn't an all-time great playoff run. Or rather, I think he said the Denver Nuggets of the team because of who they played. He would have liked to see them go against the likes of the Milwaukee Bucks or even the Boston Celtics or even Philadelphia in the finals as opposed to Miami. Because with Philadelphia he would have gone against Joel Embiid and you would have the storyline of the battle of the last two MVPs. So that would have been a component and it was would have made for a compelling storyline certainly. But at the same time, you play who you play. It's not their fault that they didn't get to play the Bucks or the Celtics or the Sixers. Those guys did in advance. And yeah, part of it may be due to injury. Part of it can be due to the bad luck of a bad luck of the draw, but it is what it is. You can't hold that against the Denver Nuggets. They did what they're supposed to do. And let's not act like I said, a lot of people did have the Suns beating them in the conference semis and the Lakers beating them in the conference finals. And that didn't happen. They did beat the Suns in six, but it took an epic like performance in games 3 and 4 by Devin Booker. I think he shot like damn near like 60 to 80% between those two games and averaged 40 points. Yeah, so yeah, if Devin Booker is doing that along with having KD, you're probably gonna lose those two games. And then they did sweep the Los Angeles Lakers, who have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and I know it was there was no real blowouts in any of the games, which is true. They all did come down to the last 3 to 5 minutes. But again, a sweep is a sweep. They did it. And yes, LeBron probably isn't at the advanced point of his career. He does have that foot injury that probably will require surgery this offseason. But hey, they did what they're supposed to do. And again, a lot of people didn't think that they were going to win. A lot of people thought that the Lakers were primed for a run to the finals after making that trade that got rid of Russ and then brought in some pieces for the likes of D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley and Jared Vanderbilt and so forth. So yeah, a lot of people just discredited Denver essentially out of the gate, but failing to realize that hey, this is what they do. This is what they virtually did all season since like December. They have had the best record in the Western Conference, and yeah, they probably just got bored, and which is why they finished the season on a bad tip. But hey, they got it right for the playoffs, and here they are now. They are NBA champions, so salute to them. Now I want to talk about the Miami Heat. There are no more victories in sports. Like Hov said before, more victories are for minor league coaches. And I agree 100%. But at the same time, the Miami Heat did have a great season. They really can't be like they can't really like be well, they can be sad because that's natural. You play for the ultimate prize and they didn't get it done yet again. But it happens. But at the same time, these guys were just clearly outmatched in the series. They were less than the Denver Nuggets. They didn't have the talent that they had. And certainly at the top, they were less physical. Their slots smaller. They rely on a lot of players who are in this position. Were in this position who a lot of people thought that they wouldn't be. And not to knock any of the undrafted players. I know a lot of people get a little emotional and sensitive with that, but hey. These guys weren't drafted. It's not like they were first round top 10 picks like the Strus, Gabe Vincent, and Caleb Martin. But they did bust their ass off and become serviceable rotation players in the NBA. And salute to them. And I think that they all got bright futures, whether it's in Miami or on another team. They can have an impact on a team and make valid contributions. But in this case, they were just outmatched. We've seen Strus was just abysmal virtually all this NBA Finals. Going scoreless in two games. He did do his thing a little bit in game five, but it certainly wasn't enough. And Jimmy Butler, I think, was just ran out of gas. Sorry, it's hard to it's unfortunate to say, but he did. I know I know he hurt his ankle, I believe, in game one. I guess the Knicks series, and people are, pointing to that possibly being a factor into why he was pretty much abysmal, certainly compared to what we've seen in round one. But he was just doing whatever he wanted to the Milwaukee Bucks. Because this finals, he averaged 21.6 assists, 4 rebounds, and he had shot a total of 41% from the field and 36% from three. So he was essentially struggling all series. But like I said, the first series against Milwaukee, he was just lighting it up. Which was he was like showing why he was coined Jimmy Buckets. Now we could point to the fact that this was a Mike Budenholzer-led team that the Miami ran up against, and Mike Budenholzer, he is extremely stubborn. He does not like to make changes. He will just stick on his laurels, and hey, he was willing to live with Jimmy Butler beating them, not setting a double team, not getting the ball out of his hands, and not even allowing Giannis to guard him. And that's probably why he is not employed currently as we speak for those decisions. But yeah, the Denver just made it really hard for him, even though like he was having his way a little bit. Whenever he got up, he got Aaron Gordon off of him in the pick and roll action. They just have a lot of length and a lot of size on that team, in Denver, and that just like I think that led to Jimmy struggling as well too. And listen, a lot of injuries, players play hurt all the time. So for people to use that excuse for Jimmy Butler, I think it's kind of corny. That's just me personally. Because a lot of people label him a superstar, which while I respect him, I think he is going to go down as a, I think he's going to go down as a great player, one of the great players in the history of the NBA, but and a future Hall of Famer, I think he will be. Because it's funny, I was looking at his accolades as opposed to the likes of Reggie Miller and Tim Hardaway, and he's right on par with them, probably slightly better. And he's been to two NBA finals, which Tim Hardaway's never been to any, and Reggie's only been to one. So I think based on that alone, Jimmy Butler will be in the Hall of Fame one day, and probably be a first ballot Hall of Famer too. All of course, it matters like when he retires and who else is eligible for the Hall of Fame as well with him. But he probably will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But yeah, from my point, a lot of players have played with injuries throughout the NBA finals. When I can think of off the top of my head, the late great Kobe Bryant against the Celtics in 2010. He played with a broken finger and a bone spur in his ankle. He still played. He pushed through it. They were able to win that series in seven. So this happens, right? Players are always nicked up throughout the season. It's a grueling season. We can't use that as an excuse for Jimmy, but then we want to give him the praise of a superstar, but then trying to give him the injury excuse as to why he didn't perform well in the playoffs. Because I know one thing, Jimmy won't make any excuses for himself, so therefore nobody else should make excuses for him. So I just think that Miami is gonna have to retool this summer. I don't know what that looks like, but I think that they are. Well, I actually did see that earlier this morning. I believe Wendy did report this on Get Up that Miami is going to be basically looking to hunt for another superstar to pair to come join Miami, and most likely, I think, to be paired up with Jimmy and Bam, because I think Bam and Jimmy are virtually untouchable. You want to keep those two together. Bam does give you a lot. A lot on the court. I wish that he was a little bit more aggressive on the offensive end, but he's good enough. Good playmaker as well. Good on the boards. Active. He just had a bad matchup with Jokic, because Jokic is like a 6'11" and basically 7 foot. And in reality, Bam's really a power forward, not a center. More like 6'9", 6'8". So he's gonna have a tough time guarding Nikola Jokic, giving up that height and that girth. Nothing he can really do. He played as hard as he could, was productive on the offensive end, but Miami's going to need a lot. And everybody's saying Dame Lillard. I think that Dame would thrive in Miami, because I think that Dame would He embodies heat culture. He's somebody that he plays hard from beginning to end. He's no nonsense. He's focused. I think that would be a good pairing with him and Jimmy Butler and Bam. I really, really do. Not everybody is built to play for the Heat. Not everybody can embrace Heat culture. It's very, very strict from the body fat and everything into the conditioning. The what they demand of you, and it's not for everybody. Which is probably why they haven't really got any real superstar, in my mind, a real superstar, since LeBron departed. But I think that they have a chance with Dame, to do that. And if they're somehow able to get Dame, keep Bam and Jimmy. I know they're probably going to have to give up a couple picks, and maybe they might have to give up Tyler Herro. I guess I think that they'll be willing to depart with Tyler Herro if it's needed to in order to acquire Bam. You give up Tyler Herro, some picks, maybe an additional player like a Gabe Vincent, Caleb Martin, or maybe you can get away with keeping Tyler Herro and give up Duncan Robinson. I don't know, but if they were to land Dame Lillard, I think that they automatically puts them in contention for the Eastern Conference with the likes of Celtics, Milwaukee, and Philly. I know Philly did and Milwaukee, made changes with the head coach at the head coach's position. So that's going to be interesting to see how that transpire. So those two teams right now are kind of iffy to me, as opposed to where they are going to be at. I think Boston really is the has the most it has the most certainty right now, because they still have that same head coach. Well, as of right now, they still have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. They're probably gonna so they have like the most certainty right now, and we just seen Miami Heat beat them in 7 games without the like of a Dame Lillard. So I don't know, they could possibly be destined for another NBA Finals run next season if they do acquire Dame Lillard, and have a way better chance of winning the NBA title next year with him, because a lot was put on Jimmy's shoulders and Bam, and I don't think that's necessarily their game. I mean, look at Jimmy. I think Jimmy's more ideal situation is one that he had in Philly. That one season he played in Philly was more like the half a season, because I think I'm pretty sure he got traded at the trade deadline just prior to it, when he had the likes of Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, Ben Simmons, all those teammates. I think that's more of a ideal situation for Jimmy, as opposed to be the primary option on the team from an offensive standpoint, at least. But he could definitely be the leader of a team, the vocal leader, or a leader by example. I think Jimmy's great in that role too. Just don't think that he should be the primary option on a championship team. Great player though, and I said he will go to the Hall of Fame. So yeah, so the Heat definitely need to make a move, because what they did, they maxed out, and there were some breaks that they had along the way. Even though that tends to happen a lot in the NBA in the playoffs, where the breaks happen for a team and they just run with it and they run with the momentum, and then they get further than they probably should have gotten. So they can't really rely on that to happen again. And I'm sure Pat Riley wants to like win another championship before he decides to call it a quit, rather to call it quits as an executive. And I think he wants to listen to add one more Larry O'Brien trophy to his stash. He has a lot so far, as a player, as a coach, and as an executive. He's done a thing so far. He's done a thing. It's one of the all-time greats in NBA history, as an executive. So he need to retool. I think they will. I can't wait to see what happens, as we are not that far away from the NBA draft. I believe it's on the 22nd. So I want to see what they do. But again, congrats to the Denver Nuggets. Much deserving. It was a great, great, great run to a championship that the city deserved, that the city has been craving for 47 years, basically. So yeah, salute to them. All right, so Shannon Sharpe's last day on Undisputed was today. After 7 long years on the show, he had decided to move on, as it was announced several weeks ago that he reached a buyout agreement with FS1. He will no longer be the counterpart to Skip Bayless. And for many, this was the writing was on the wall. Over the last 7 months, we've seen them go through some motions. Most notably with the DeMar Hamlin situation, Skip's tweet, and then there was that incident they had in a quote-unquote heated debate in which Skip took a shot at Shannon Sharpe, questioning his illustrious Hall of Fame career in the NFL. Now, I'm not going to say that that didn't play a part. I don't think that that's the main factor. There's something bigger than that. I think that this is just a clash, essentially a clash of egos. When you're in this position that Skip and Shannon are in, right, where you have all this notoriety, you're beloved by the masses, in Skip's case, probably not beloved, but people who love you, people who hate you, it has to be either or. You can't be in between. And Skip is a big draw, right? So when you get to that point in your career, you're gonna develop an ego. If you didn't have one already, it's gonna just balloon, right? So Shannon Sharpe, when he got that job at FS1, that was essentially all Skip Bayless. It's well documented. I'm sure if you watched the episode today, Undisputed, Shannon like expressed his gratitude to Skip for giving him the opportunity, for believing in him and seeing something in him and allow his career to take off in this space. So like I said, he believed in him. Because that role that Shannon Sharpe has held over the last several years, or 7 years, is not typically reserved for former athletes. That's your traditional journalists, whether it's writing for the paper, blogs, or broadcasters. Whereas the former athletes will come on sporadically, talk about what's going on in the sports as it relates to the field that they were in, the sport that they played. Skip saw something in Shannon Sharpe. He fought for him hard behind the scenes, and he got his way. Shannon's been on the show since day one in 2016, and since then, it's like he just caught fire, and it hasn't been extinguished since because he is very, very popular. You've seen that with that Club Say Say show he has on YouTube. He's doing great numbers. He's a high engagement on social media. He's always getting retweeted on my timeline every day. That's what I see. People really love him. You know, they love him like they love their own uncle. So I think that he just got to a point where you had two alpha males on a show, and it's really hard for them to occupy the same space, right? And this is kind of like nothing different than what we see too with relationships. Let's say you and your significant other or your spouse, you guys are together a lot. Like these guys are together a lot because they've done a show for the past 7 years, so they're spending a lot of time with each other. You're gonna go through your emotions with your spouse or your significant other, and in some cases you might just go apart and then decide it's time to move on, one or the other, or even mutually you will come to that conclusion. Not a perfect world. It's reality. This is what happens. And I think that is what's happened here. It was really dope to see Shannon express his gratitude to everybody. He just went through a list of people from his stylist, the security guards at FS1, and the list goes on and on. Even had one of his daughters there too as well. He had her come on camera. That's really dope to see that side, that transparency, which you don't really see a lot. And again, I just felt that it was really, really dope to see him like showing love to Skip, because Skip did give him the opportunity, and he took the most and ran with it. It was good to see Skip show love to Shannon as well, because it's been really, really ugly. That's what what was projected all throughout social media and on blog sites that these two like really just like well especially Shannon like probably just that's hate Skip right now. There was a bunch of friction, but it's good to see that they actually like showed that class and the quorum and this last day. I don't know where they stand at off camera. If they really are, if they really are friends, or they were just, or they just have like mutual respect from each other from a profession standpoint. But I think it was really really classy of them to, you know, end the show the way that they did today. And particularly Skip, because I think that Skip kind of gets a bad rap. And on social media, as like this evil person. When some people, I just think that he's just, you know, very passionate about what he does. He has a strong stance on certain issues, or you know, certain like debates, and that can rub people the wrong way. And, you know, I feel like sometimes a lot of people just always want to have a villain just so they can hate on them. If you're a wrestling fan like me, it's like, you know, the baby face, the heel. Shannon was face. Skip is a heel, and people are always going to like grab it towards, well, people for the most part will grab it towards to the face, and the heel would be the one that everybody just despises and wants to boo and, you know, and just like just have spit venom towards. And I think kind of feel like that is what's happening with Skip. I mean, is Skip perfect? Has he said some things that are out of pocket? Yes, but I mean, in today's climate, a lot of things are considered to be out of pocket. But yes, he has said things, but at the end of the day, nobody's perfect. We all have said things that we regret and wish that we can possibly take back, or if we can get a do-over, we would love to do it over. So I'm just happy to see that they gave that image on TV as Shannon's last day on FS1. It was really dope. Don't know who's going to replace Shannon Sharp going forward. Last I seen, it would look like Shady McCoy was like in the running, leading the race as the one who's going to be elected to be Skip's regular partner on that show. I think that Shady has potential. I can see that working out, and I think that they probably, I mean, let's keep it real. It's probably going to want to have, you know, one black guy, and a white guy, as opposed to having like two white guys. So I think that FS1 probably would play it safe, and they would probably want to go with Shady off that. And the fact that I think that he had the potential to really like excel in that job. I see Nick Wright's name in the running as well. Oh my God, I wouldn't want to say that just because, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of this debate culture. The sports debate culture that has been established over the past, 10, 12 years. And, you know, you got Skip, who loves Michael Jordan, thinks Michael Jordan is a GOAT. And you down on the opposite end of the spectrum, you got Nick Wright, who is just a LeBron fanboy. Let's face it, he's a fanboy. That would just be like a migraine waiting to happen every day, because that topic of who is the GOAT, I don't even care at this point what people think. I have my beliefs. I can promise right now, I would never do that. I would never have that topic on this podcast regarding the Michael Jordan and LeBron James, who's the GOAT, because I'm just sick of it at this point, right? We've been hearing it for like 10, 12 years now. I'm tired of it. That would probably be nonstop if Nick Wright ever got to get Shannon's seat and debate Skip Bayless. It would just be nauseating, and I couldn't stomach it at all. So I think that Shady McCoy would be the right candidate based on everybody that I've heard this far. So I wouldn't think that he would officially come on the show anytime soon. So maybe Skip's just going to go dolo for a little bit, or maybe they might pull a first take with Skip, with just, you know, Stephen A being the primary person in the show along with Molly, and then you have a rotating crew coming in with like the likes of JJ Redick, Dan Orlovsky, Ryan Clark, Kendrick Perkins, etc. I can see Fox going that route. That would probably be a smart thing to do, because I don't think you can just want to, yeah, well, actually you have to do that, because it's the debate show. You can't have Skip just talking for like 2.5 hours You know what I'm saying? He has the head. So yeah, I think they're probably gonna do something to that effect. But Shannon Sharp, I think that he has, well, he definitely has a bright future now. After these after this time on Undisputed, I couldn't imagine him not having something lined up in the near future. I'm interested to see what that will be. Last I heard about him was a rumor of possibly going to ESPN, possibly joining Stephen A on First Take. Well, I can see that working. But yeah, that would be great for ESPN. As they, you know, they're looking to, you know, to boost their ratings now. You see, they struck the deal with Pat McAfee, so getting Shannon Sharp was going to bring an audience. It will only like boost their ratings up even higher. But man, that would be a devastating blow to FS1 for sure, because you know that they're trying to be a direct competitor to ESPN, which I don't think will. Well, I won't say never happen, but it's very, very hard to, you know, dethrone the worldwide leader in sports that they've been around for so long. And you know, they're just like synonymous with sports. When I was a kid, just waking up every morning, when I was getting ready for school, I would always have ESPN on my TV. So I still have that mindset to this day when I'm up and about doing work. I'm getting things done early in the morning. The first channel I have it on is ESPN. That's just how it is. So I don't, and I'm pretty sure that I can't be the only one who's like that. I'm sure a majority of the Americans who love sports feel the same way. But FS1 does have a bright future, so they really gonna have to get this right. With getting Shannon's replacement, but I can even see Shannon Sharp doing something like kind of like what Pat McAfee did with his own show on YouTube, and then struck a deal with FanDuel. There's going to be plenty of suitors out there for Shannon Sharp. I believe Club Shay Shay is a Fox a Fox property, FS1 property, so he can't take that name, but he can certainly start his own podcast and just, you know, just re like you know start his own podcast. Obviously has to be a different title, but Shannon's anybody who definitely can't take the same, you can't take the same the followers from that account, because it's FS1, if that is correct, because I'm pretty sure it is. So he'll have to start from the ground up, but again, he's so popular and he can just do a couple of episodes, you know, promote, put it on YouTube, then start promoting it on his social media and build a social media page up from the ground up, and he'll just, you know, essentially pick up right where he left off. I feel like that's how popular Shannon Sharp is, because yeah, he's just everywhere on TV. But again, salute to Shannon Sharp. It's good to see that him and Skip Bayless, you know, they showed respect for each other today. I don't know, again, I don't know just how, I don't know their relationship off camera, nor do I even care, but it was good that they portrayed that. Because they both are really good. Actually, you know what? They're really, really great at what they do. I'm in that field, because that job is not easy. Regardless of what people say about, you know, of Skip and his erratic takes that they might think it is, and they think that anybody can just go up there and do what he does, or Shannon Sharpe, vice versa, or even the likes of Stephen A. Smith. I know for a fact that it's not easy, especially for the likes of Skip and. Skip and Stephen A, because I know I've always wanted to enter the journalism field when I was a kid, so I know a lot about like what it takes like to get that to that level that Skip and Stephen A got into. You have to start off essentially from the ground up, basically living up at the poverty threshold, you know, trying just struggling to keep your lights on, struggling to eat, work your way up the ladders, get rejected plenty of time, and get rejected plenty of times, and you know, just being told you're not good enough, or you know, you're replaced one day, hired the next day, replaced one day, hired the next day. It's a lot, right? So that's why when I see what they guys do on TV, and I know the grind that they put in just to get there, and even the grind that continues when they're at that level, I gotta tip my hat off to them, because I know how hard it is. Not anybody can just go up there and do what they do. I know a lot of people think that they do, which is why they probably try to get into podcasting and see if they can do it, buy all this equipment, and then after a few months, they probably just like, this isn't for me. They're not seeing like the instant they're not getting that instant gratification that they probably thought they would have gotten when not realizing this is a true grind. It's going to take some time, and there's no shortcut. So I respect anybody who's on that level and that does what they do, regardless of whether or not I agree with every single take that they have. Because it's really, really hard. I know that. But again, salute to Shannon Sharp. He will land on his feet and will be back like he never left. He probably has something lined up already. Who knows? I wouldn't be shocked if he does. Yeah, so I just want to talk about that. Salute to Shannon Sharp. And that is it for this episode. Thank you guys for your support. And if you're new to this pod, hopefully you enjoyed it and also hope you'll stick around. And if you haven't already, be sure to hit that subscribe button as this pod is available damn near everywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts at. That includes Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other platforms, of course. And you can also keep up with me as well on social media, Instagram and Twitter at MrVincent13. You can like my Facebook fan page as well, Emmanuel Vincent. Damn, this is the downtime of the year, so I have no idea when my next episode is coming out. I'm sure I'll think of something, though. It won't be long before you hear it from me again. But until next time, stay blessed, stay safe, take care.